This is Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus.
And I'm Michaela LaFrac. This week, the Vermont legislature returned to session. Proceedings are going to look a little bit different this year. For at least the next 2 weeks, everything from floor sessions to committee meetings is going to be entirely virtual. That means no hallway chit-chat about bills and no negotiating over lunch.
Later this hour, we'll hear from a progressive senator about the ways the Progressive Party plans to push the legislature to fill their agenda, as well as hear what they hope to accomplish this year. Keep in mind, Republicans and Democrats hold seats in the House and Senate majority and minority seats, which can make getting things done tough for progressives in Montpelier.
We're also going to hear from two members of the Republican leadership, the Senate and House minority leaders, on how they plan to advance the Republican agenda. And we're going to ask about how their different priorities and strategies are going to face up against the Republican majority.
But first, we're going to start with the Democratic leadership. They have already laid out their plan on what they want to accomplish. They say they're going to focus on supporting Vermont working families by making, quote, sizable investments with much-needed policy support and pandemic response, addressing the housing crisis, workforce shortage, protecting the climate and planet, to name a few. I now want to welcome House Speaker Jill Krawinski, who represents Chittenden County. Representative Krawinski, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
We also have Senate Pro Tem Becca Ballant, who serves Windham County. Senator Ballant, welcome.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Now, I do want to note that Senator Ballant kicked off her congressional campaign last month, but today we are strictly talking to her as State Senator Ballant. We'll have her on another time to discuss her run for Congress, as well as other candidates running for those offices. Representative Krawinski, I'm going to start with you. So the legislature decided to start the session virtually this year. How does that impact how the Democrats are going to help working families?
Well, it just carries on the work that we started last biennium to create a recovery plan from COVID that leaves no Vermonter behind. And so we'll continue where we left off, working on increasing access to affordable housing, childcare, really focusing on workforce development and climate change. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of work to prepare for this session, and we're going to hit the ground running.
You know, the housing crisis, Representative Krawinski, a big topic. A lot of Vermonters are really struggling and having problems, employers having problems with people coming into the state because of this housing shortage. So what specifically are you and the legislature doing to mitigate this situation?
Yeah, so we are taking many different strategies and looking at how we can expand access to affordable housing in the state. And we passed a bill last year that the governor vetoed to expand access, and we're going to pick up where we left off with that bill. It's investing money in organizations that can build affordable housing. It's looking at actually workforce development. In some ways, all roads lead back to workforce development when we're talking about the challenges that so many working families are facing in this state. So what can we do to increase access to people who can build the homes? Looking at other ways around first-time home buying to support families who are new and want to buy their first home. So many, many different ways and strategies that we're looking at increasing access to housing.
Senator Ballant, last year, there were some pretty big legislative battles over unemployment benefits, teacher pensions, to name a few. What are the big fault lines that you predict will happen in this session?
I appreciate the question. You know, we never can fully anticipate what those fault lines will be. The good thing about where we are right now in terms of the conversations with our unions around pensions is that we have been in really careful, constructive conversation for months, and we feel like we are getting closer to an agreement that we all can get behind. And so we remain optimistic. We know that there were funding shortages that happened to our pension system decades ago, and we need to make right by our state employees and make sure that we're making those investments while also making sure there is dedicated appropriations committed to filling that hole going forward. So I'm feeling like the last few months in particular has seen a new renewed interest in the parties coming together to really work on the solution, because what we all want is to have a sustainable solvent pension system long term. So we're going to make what we hope is a really strong plan that we can get behind, that the pension union representatives can get behind, and that ultimately, hopefully, the governor will get behind as well. So there are always issues that come before the legislature that we don't anticipate having fault lines. So I always try to keep in mind that something that is not controversial to someone in the southern part of the state might be controversial to someone in Chittenden County and vice versa. So we always have to be conscious of making sure we have good geographic representation within any conversation that we're having.
Now, Representative Kerwinski, I'm going to ask you, it's a very direct, specific question. Do you think it's possible to have a pension reform bill that does not restrict benefits in the future, ask people to pay more, or ask people to retire later?
Oh, my gosh, that is a great question. And that is what our pension task force has been working on this entire summer and fall, working together to find a compromise and how we can move forward that all parties agree to. So that is our mission. And that's what we're continuing to work on. Like the pro tem said, we've been really working hard with all of the stakeholders to find a solution that helps deal with our massive unfunded pension liability, while also ensuring that our hardworking state employees and our teachers can guarantee a pension when they retire. So that is our mission. That is our focus.
So is that a yes or a no?
We are still talking and negotiating. So I don't want to say and get ahead of what we all will agree to because we haven't decided yet.
And let's go to Senator Ballin. So some of those big topics, you know, pensions, unemployment benefits, those were stuff that were disagreements among the Democratic Party and not just with the governor. Where do you see the party going in terms of unity around some of these really big issues?
Again, I'm feeling really optimistic. People understand the moment that we're in right now in this pandemic. We are almost 2 years in. Our constituents are exhausted. Our families can't work any harder. Our schools and healthcare services cannot work any harder. We have to be absolutely focused on working together within our party, across party lines, and with the governor. That's what Vermonters want us to do. That is what we will do. We were able to get a lot done last session on so many issues that Vermonters care about. And we're going to, as Jill said, we're going to continue this work. And, you know, just to remind folks who may not remember, the speaker and I did a virtual tour around the state in the fall and winter. We were able to communicate and hear from 1,400 Vermonters about their priorities. And that really is shaping our agenda for this session. What we heard in every corner of the state, we have to address our housing crisis, the workforce crisis, climate action, and a few other key issues. And because what we are you know, focused on has come directly from what Vermonters have said they need, those are going to be our marching orders, and we're going to stay focused on that. So that will be the challenge that the speaker and I have in holding our chambers together and also holding our caucuses together.
You know, I think that, again, I want to get back to this point that, like, you mentioned your constituents are exhausted. I don't know if that leaves a lot of room for optimism. You know, we are 2 years into the pandemic. I think a lot of people, Senator Ballin, yourself included, really want to see more masking mandates and want to see stronger policies that just aren't happening. So how can you ensure optimism to people that are listening right now?
Right. Well, so, you know, I can't ensure optimism, right? Optimism comes from within. What I can say is that every single legislator that I talk to is eager to do the work that's ahead of them. And we will, you know, to your issue, you know, let's just be really transparent here. It is no surprise, I don't think, to anyone to hear that the speaker and I have been at odds with the governor on issues around masking and other statewide protections for Vermonters. And, you know, we still have disagreements with the governor. But those disagreements, although they may continue, cannot get in the way of the work that we have to do to invest these hundreds of millions of dollars wisely. That's why I'm optimistic. We have an opportunity that we've been given from the federal government to make investments in Vermont to make lives better for families. And so we're not going to be distracted, even if we do have these very public disagreements with the executive branch.
Let's go to Matt in Essex Junction. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What comments do you have for Senator Ballant or Representative Kerwinski?
Yeah, sure. So to tag on your point of optimism, my question was around emerging technologies and sort of setting ourselves up for the future. So using our imaginations, what manufacturing industrial systems are we setting up that are going to lead us to a completely new place? I'll give you a quick example. So like 3D printing, could we use our recycling facilities and biotechnology to 3D print, make Vermont a leader in the 3D printing industry, and then have large facilities then that create houses very quickly from recycled materials? Like, can Vermont pave the way towards a future generation that's, you know, on the edge of science fiction sort of a thing?
Let's start with Representative Kerwinski.
Matthew, that is a really interesting question. You know, I've been talking with our chair of our Energy and Technology Committee, Representative Briglin. He's talking about taking up an artificial intelligence bill at the beginning of session. There's been an intersection with that, with our workforce development conversation. The one thing I'm asking our committees to do, I'm asking every committee in the House to look at workforce development opportunities and challenges in their committees, so that this isn't just focused in one area and that it's broad and we're talking about everything from nursing to childcare to housing. And I think that some of the examples you've mentioned will absolutely be coming up in those conversations. And I really urge you to reach out to us and share your ideas as well, because it's really important to have as many different ideas around the table. Thank you for the question.
Senator Ballant, did you want to add on to that, or should we move on?
You know, one thing I would just say is that we are always looking to see where Vermont, as a small but mighty state, can fit into a niche market. And so I'm so glad you mentioned the 3D printing. It's something that I personally have been looking at as well. I serve on the Economic Development Committee in the Senate. And one of the questions that I've had is, you know, is that something that can work in colder climates? So I really encourage you to reach out to me at my legislative address so that we can continue the conversation, because it's just ironic that I had just been reading an article on that. So I really appreciate the call.
Senator Ballant, we got an email from Christine, and they ask, what process is being made on paid family leave? Do you think employers should be required to offer it in the state?
I really, this is one of the topics that gives me a little bit of heartache. We worked so hard, and by we, I mean, you know, the Speaker and I were both majority leaders together for years in each of our chambers, working hard on paid family leave. And we thought that we had developed a package that the governor could get behind. And so just to give folks an idea, we did pass a paid family leave bill here in Vermont. We're very proud of that. And the governor chose not to go along with the plan that we made. We thought perhaps that he would be able to have a program that was also developed in conjunction with New Hampshire that also hasn't panned out. And so it is a tremendous disappointment that Build Back Better has not delivered on paid family leave. I know it's something that's important to both the speaker and me. And we're trying to see, you know, what can we do in this short session, given that we had anticipated that the federal government would be helping in this way. We know that we need this for Vermont families. We've heard it over and over again. And so it is, I wish I could end on a brighter note, saying we will be able to do a heavy lift on it this upcoming session. I don't think that's the case, but we will continue to make progress, because it's going to be one of the things that will help us to attract younger workers to the state, and we know that.
Is it possible to get it passed and then have the governor veto it and then have the governor and then override the governor's veto?
that was the situation that we were in previously. And because I'll just be transparent, I haven't done a vote count on this particular issue in my chamber. I don't know if we would have the votes to override.
And then Representative Kerwinski, nationally, most analysts are expecting big losses in legislative elections. Do you fear the same thing in Vermont? And what is the Vermont Democratic Party doing to shore up its chances?
Well, I think the scene on the national front is definitely different and has its own unique challenges and opportunities compared to Vermont. I am really proud of the work that our town and county chairs and legislators have been doing to recruit candidates up and down the ballot. We have been holding listening sessions with different groups to talk about what values we share and what we want to talk about on the campaign trail. And it's all of the same things that we've been talking about right on the show here. You know, concerns about workforce development, climate change, housing, childcare. And so I'm really excited to roll up our sleeves and get to work and make progress on all of these policies that impact working families and to show them that we can deliver and we can make life better for everyone and leave no one behind.
Senator Ballant, I think, you know, when we have politicians on, a big part of what we do is try to hold our legislatures and our elected officials accountable. Moving forward, how would you like Vermonters to hold you and the Democratic Party accountable for the promises that are being made to your constituents today?
So two things I would say. One, we, on a daily basis in the legislature, especially right now through this COVID pandemic, are accountable on a daily basis because every single thing that we do right now in the legislature is streamed online. We have never had a more transparent government here in Vermont. So regardless of where you're sitting, with a caveat, you know, if you have access to broadband, and that's another issue, but you can watch everything that we did last session online. You do not need to drive to the state house anymore. And that's especially important for those of us who live, you know, 2 hours away from the state house. So I just want to remind us that that is one small silver lining, but an important one for Vermonters. In terms of promises, promises made, promises kept is how, you know, we talk about it in politics. I think the important thing for Vermonters to keep in mind is that we're laying out an agenda right now that is supporting working families. We have heard from Vermonters about what are the areas in which you want us to invest the money. And so you're going to be able to go back at the end of the session and say, they said they were going to make housing investments. Did they do so? They said they were going to, you know, make investments in climate action, weatherization, electrification. Did they do so? I think, you know, we are lucky in Vermont in that we are a small state where people have pretty open access to their representatives. And I really hope that what the story will be at the end of the session is that we delivered on what we said were the most important things to deliver on.
Representative Kerwinski, do you have anything you would like to add to that?
Oh, I just agree with Senator Ballant 100%. And at the end of the session, we're going to be going out, knocking on doors. Hopefully it's safe to do that. And having these one-on-one conversations with our constituents about what we worked on and getting feedback. And that is something that is really important. And I'm excited to get to work and to be able to deliver on that.
Another big topic is Vermont's legal cannabis market is set to start retail sales in about 9 months. That's on October 1st. The Cannabis Control Board has a lot of features it wants to see in the final rules for the industry, including equity provisions for those harmed by the war on drugs. Do you support what's been proposed so far, Senator Ballant?
Yes, I do. And I do feel like the Cannabis Control Board has really done a really great job right out of the gate. We gave them a very big task. They have been focused on equity. They understand that Black and Brown and communities that have people in poverty have been more impacted by the war on drugs than other communities. And so it is important that in Vermont, I've heard throughout our conversation, and this has been years of passing our cannabis laws and updating our laws. We always say we want to do it the Vermont way. And what that means is making sure there is a market for small growers, making sure that regular Vermonters have access to the industry. And I do think that we're going to have to continue to revisit these issues, making sure we're getting it right. But I feel like we are a state that has learned from other states that have really veered into the area of what some people call big weed or big pot. That's not who we are. It's not what we want to do. And I feel like the board is approaching it with an open mind and really listening carefully to what Vermonters want this cannabis industry to look like here in our state.
Senator Becca Ballot, thank you so much for being on Vermont Edition today. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Representative Krawinski, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you. Have a happy New Year.
You too.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today, we are speaking to Vermont lawmakers about their priorities for the new legislative session, which just kicked off this week. We just heard from two Democratic leaders, and now we're going to hear from two members of the Republican Party. First, we welcome Senate Minority Leader Randy Brock of Franklin County. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We also have with us House Minority Leader Patty McCoy of Pulteney. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Senator Brock, let's start with you. We just heard from Democratic leadership, and I'm curious what issues you think that Vermont Republicans and Democrats are on the same page about. What issues do you think you're going to make real progress on this year?
Well, I think there are a number of issues. The big issue, of course, is response to the COVID pandemic and proper use of the federal funds, of which are at unprecedented levels, to ensure that we actually help Vermonters to through this recovery. I think another major issue is in workforce reforms, dealing with the shortage of critical employees throughout the state that employers are almost universally affected by, and we, I think, will try to do a number of things in that area. The last area, well, it's not just the last, but affordable housing. Housing is a crisis throughout Vermont, and dealing with solutions for housing is certainly on our agenda, and I know it's on the majority party's agenda, although we may tend to do and propose things that are somewhat different than what they do. And then lastly, there are issues in healthcare that we have to deal with.
Well, let's start with one of those priorities that you mentioned, the federal funding that's going to be coming into Vermont. Senator Brock, as you mentioned, Vermont's receiving a lot of federal dollars from COVID relief packages, the new infrastructure bill. And after last year's legislative session, I was just reading something that you wrote in VT Digger about how the legislature, in your opinion, didn't do enough to create a clear strategy for spending this once-in-a-lifetime, as you called it, influx of cash. So what are your specific priorities this year in terms of spending that money?
Well, I think my first priority is to get the money out to the people who need it in a timely fashion. But I will add to that something that I think we need to do better and needed to do better in the last session, and that is ensure that there are appropriate internal controls to ensure that the money is being used appropriately and that we have appropriate checkback procedures to ensure that we accomplish what we intended to with those funds.
Can you clarify what you mean by those internal controls?
Internal controls are the processes that we use to ensure that money is well spent, that it goes to where it's supposed to go, that it does what it's supposed to do, and that it is properly safeguarded and shepherded. These are the fundamental processes that should be in any government organization to ensure that money is being spent as intended and being spent properly in accordance with the rules for safeguarding money.
And are you implying that there's some concern that if left to their own devices, that your Democratic colleagues might not spend that money wisely?
I'm not suggesting that at all. But what I am suggesting is that we need to ensure that money is being spent as intended and spent well and ensure that we have processes in place that give us comfort that that, in fact, is happening.
Well, Representative McCoy, let's turn to you. One of the major issues facing the state, as Senator Brock mentioned, is the shortage of affordable housing. And the issue affects Vermont's ability to attract the workforce that it really needs to have a strong economy. So how do you think the legislature and specifically the House should address the housing crisis this session?
Yeah, and you know, this is not just specific to the state of Vermont. I think you'll see this throughout our country, that there is an affordable housing issue throughout many, many states in our country. How we approach it, I know we've done some things to alleviate some of that and giving, you know, sort of like down payment assistance to lower or moderate income individuals. I think that helps tremendously. I think that the pathway to housing begins with having your down payment available, which is very difficult in this day and age when if you're looking at a 20% down payment and housing is, you know, $500,000 and above, especially in the Chittenden County area, that's just, you know, it's unattainable for your average Vermonter. So we have to look at creative ways of getting people into housing and making it affordable at the same time.
Do you think that there is a solution to be found in changing Vermont's property taxes?
Well, we already have an avenue for property taxes that it should be no more than 2% of your income through your property tax rebate program, which I think is a great program for those lower income individuals, as well as our large population of seniors who really depend on that property tax rebate to pay their property taxes.
Now, listeners, we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions for Senate Minority Leader Randy Brock or House Minority Leader Patty McCoy on Republican legislative priorities for the 2022 session here in Vermont, you can call us at 800-639-2211 or email us at vermontedition@vpr.org. Now, as both of you might have heard in the previous segment on this show, speaking to Democratic leaders, major issue in the state right now is child care. We've received a number of questions about how Vermonters and how Vermont lawmakers are going to address issues of child care and paid family leave. It's a big topic, but Senator Brock, let's start with you. What do you think can be done this year in this session to address issues that Vermont families are facing in terms of finding affordable child care, especially amidst the pandemic?
Well, one of the biggest problems is the child care workforce and the amount of money that folks who enter into child care are being paid. Now, we did a number of reforms in child care to produce, quote, higher quality, unquote, health care by adding quite a large number of regulations and restrictions and educational requirements and other issues. We had many, many home-based and private child care facilities, typically run by women, who did not continue their business after many of these restrictions were put in place. And as a result, we had a shrinking child care workforce immediately. And one of the things I think we should do is I think we should go back and take a look at whether or not we created unintended consequences by reducing the supply of child care. In the attempt to make it better, we actually made it more limited and perhaps we made it worse. I think that review is critically important. I think the second thing we have to look at is in the event that we do any kind of child care subsidies, we have to be very careful to come up with a funding source that allows us to do it. Remember that before the pandemic, we chronically had difficulty closing the budget gap in the general fund. This avalanche of federal money made things look very, very rosy for a period of time, but that federal money is going to go away. And I think we have to be very careful in creating programs that have large revenue outlays out in the future after federal funds are gone to determine whether or not we can afford to pay for it and what the revenue sources are for that. And I know that we're going to be doing work on that during this session.
Right. And it seems as if, you know, one of the priorities for the Vermont legislature, for the state as a whole, is to attract a workforce, particularly a younger workforce, that funding childcare adequately would be one of those key priorities to getting people to move into the state.
It would. And one of the things that I think is imperative that we do with every one of these programs that has that as an intent is we have to do the financial homework to say, if we attract people, it's just like on things like the remote worker program and the returning worker program, if we attract people for those programs to come to Vermont, the purpose to a great extent is to attract people who will add to our tax revenue, who will add to our economic activity, is to be able to establish programs and measure, did we in fact achieve what we intended to achieve? Was the result in effect a net gain? I believe that in things like remote worker programs and so on, it is a net gain, and it may very well be that we will find that true for childcare, but you can't tell if you don't measure.
Right. Representative McCoy, I'd like to turn to you with this discussion, particularly around the topic of paid family leave. We recently just heard Senator Becca Ballant discussing her disappointment that the paid family leave bill here in Vermont passed, but it was then vetoed by the governor. President Biden's Build Back Better bill has stalled, which would have a lot of funding in it for both child care and paid family leave. So where do you stand on this question of putting more money towards paid family leave in the state?
Well, I'd have to add to what Senator Brock just mentioned. It comes down to the cost and what the cost is to Vermonters and can we afford it? You know, when we originally are talking about, either child care or paid family leave, it's a cost to businesses. It's a cost to employers who employ individuals. What can they afford? I mean, you're talking 12 weeks, 16 weeks. I know other states and maybe perhaps some businesses in this state have gone to a PTO, just personal time off, instead of lumping vacation here and sick time here. It's just this is what you get for the year, and you manage it the way the employee manages what their personal time off is. But the bottom line is, it's how much can businesses afford, and is it government's role to support that paid family leave?
Well, I wonder what you would say.
As you've seen federally, it stalled because the price tag was prohibitively expensive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we found with the paid family leave as it was laid out a few years ago to the legislature.
I just wonder what you would say, though, to a parent, perhaps, who feels like they're really drowning. There's no way for them to, have a job that brings in enough money for their family and send their child to childcare, and might be frustrated to hear lawmakers going back and forth about whether the state can afford to put money towards this priority. I think there are a lot of parents out there who say, figure out a way to make it a priority, to afford it.
Well, it would be a taxable, it probably would become a tax, and they would be taxed as well for that. And mm-hmm. then you'd also be taxing people who are not going to use that program. And I believe that's what was happening. There was a blanket tax to individuals who would never use that program. And you were taxing part-time students who were, 16, 17 years old, and they were getting taxed in their payroll to, for this paid family leave or child care. And, there has to be a way of doing it, but it has to be affordable. And as Senator Brock said, we have, everybody's looking at all of this money that's coming in, but that well is going to dry up, and it's going to dry up quickly. And what happens in, 2025, 2024, 2025, when there is no money to support these programs, then what? And I would also have to piggyback on what Senator Brock said as far as the child care. We as a state, I think, have made it so difficult for people to even set up shop to and not just in childcare business, but any business in this state. We have to really look at what we're mandating to businesses to see what they can actually afford in order for them to come and do business here in this state. We saw a lot of child care places that just couldn't do it and closed their doors, which is probably part of our child care issue right now.
And Senator Brock, I'd love to give you a chance to weigh in on this as well.
Well, the one thing I wanted to say is that as far as paid family leave was concerned, that we did, in fact, offer an alternative proposal when this was being debated by the legislature. We obviously looked at the starting point was the joint Vermont-New Hampshire program. But when New Hampshire was not able to go along with the joint program, there was still the paid family leave program that state government was going to provide. And we offered a proposal that would create a voluntary paid family leave program that would piggyback on the state employee program, thereby providing a large enough pool so that the cost would be reduced, and then providing a mechanism so that people could sign in to that program or participate in it at much lower cost than they can individually. So there was, in fact, an alternative, and the alternative was voluntary for people, A, who wanted it, and B, who were willing to contribute to it. It also avoided the taxation of everyone, because there were going to be thousands of Vermonters who were going to be taxed for the paid family leave program that was under discussion and could never benefit from it.
Well, lots more to talk about there, but I want to make sure that we bring in some of our callers. Let's go now to Josie in Grand Isle. You're on the air.
Hi there. I live in Grand Isle, and we don't have any testing sites for vaccination sites in the entire county. And I was just wondering how the legislature is going to approach smaller counties with fewer people, but we still have great need. And that's one thing. I also just want to chime in about the paid family leave. I don't have any children in school, and I'm perfectly fine with my property taxes going to fund the school. So I think there's a misconception that just because we're not going to benefit doesn't mean we're not going to pay in. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks for your thoughts there, Josie. And Senator Brock, let's start with you on the topic of expanding testing sites to more rural areas of the state. What is the legislature doing to keep this at top of mind?
Well, it certainly is a top of mind, and I know it's a top of mind for the Department of Health. Clearly, there are resource issues throughout, and the testing is being focused where there are the most people. But at the same time, we certainly can't neglect our rural communities. The pop-up testing sites, the mobile testing sites that the Department of Health is using, I think certainly could be expanded, and there could be more communication to rural areas about the ability to have mobile testing to serve their needs. And so I do think that's important.
And then on this topic of COVID, we haven't hit on it too much in this conversation, but as both of you know, the session is going to be completely remote at least until January 18th. So Representative McCoy, I'm curious how you think that working remotely is going to affect the way that you and your colleagues are going to be able to do your job. And in particular, I wonder if this democratic process that we have is going to become kind of more more private now that conversations are going to be happening not out in hallways or meeting rooms, but one-on-one on Zoom or phone calls.
Right. And the one-on-one and Zoom calls probably aren't happening as much as you think, because when you're Zooming for 10 hours a day, the last thing you want to do is pick up a phone and call or Zoom again. So I think it has kind of tied the hands of a lot of legislators who typically do reach across the aisle to get consensus on bills. So I absolutely disagree with legislating the way we have for the last year and a half. And I've said time and time again, Zooming is exhausting. While we've given unprecedented access to the public to actually watch our our goings on, committee work and floor work, they haven't had the opportunity in real time to actually, stop us in a hallway to give us their feedback on what they just heard in committee. So it's I disagree with the way we're doing it. I'm hoping, I know, my goal is to get us back in there January 18th. So we legislate in that people's house so that people can actually have greater access to us in real time.
House Minority Leader Patty McCoy, thank you so much for joining Vermont Edition.
You're quite welcome.
And Senate Minority Leader Randy Brock, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you again.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. We're going to continue our conversation about the 2022 legislative session. We have heard from Democratic and Republican leadership about their goals and objectives for the future. Now we're going to hear from a longtime progressive voice in the Senate, that's Senator Chris Pearson, who serves Chittenden County. Senator Pearson, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you, Connor. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. So I just want to start with, how hard is it as a progressive with a progressive agenda to get through a mostly Democratic House and Senate?
Well, it's, you know, the Senate is in particular not all that partisan. So it's about putting good ideas on the table and doing the legwork to have a coalition behind you. It's not as hard as you might think, although I'm always left wanting more.
So then what role does the party play in trying to get things passed?
Well, I think we help orient and keep the focus on the needs of working families, on the needs of investment for climate infrastructure. You know, I would say it's kind of an exciting time in Montpelier in the sense that there are a lot of resources available through the federal relief programs and stimulus. We have strong revenue at the state level. We have the opportunity to address decades of deferred social maintenance. You know, if you think of the state as an old house, we have been ignoring a lot of our challenges for far too long and skimping on those repairs in the analogy. And so now we have some resources. We've got crises across the board, whether you're looking at mental health, home care, child care. You're looking at the climate crisis of water quality, on and on and on. And we have some money to address those. So progressives will be doing everything we can to keep those investments oriented at working families. And you know, there are plenty of voices that will be pushing for tax breaks for businesses and more relief going to business owners. And too few of us saying, hey, what about working families, folks that are living more at the median household income in Vermont, which is somewhere around $60,000. That means half of our homes in Vermont are in homes that are households that earn $63,000 or less. That view is not reflected enough in Montpelier, in my opinion. And that's what we're really trying to keep the focus and attention drawn to.
So earlier on the show, we heard from Senator Ballin and Representative Krawinski, and they really chimed in on, really honed in on really helping Vermont working families. You say that you want to help Vermont working families as well. How do the Democrats and the progressive agendas differ when it comes to helping Vermont working families?
Well, I'm not sure at this moment that they differ a ton in that way, right? We've seen in recent years a minimum wage bill carried through the legislature, vetoed by the governor, didn't want the minimum wage to be $15. For instance, I will be and others pushing that again this year. I think we can go to 15 again much more quickly based on the job market today. I think there is a recognition of things that just sticking with the $15 minimum wage, I was one of the first legislators to introduce that back in 2014. It took us until about 2018 to put it on the governor's desk, right? So in many cases, progressives are out in front leading on these issues and are able to bring the majority party along. Another area is climate. A lot of us have been screaming about the climate crisis and recognize that, frankly, not only does Vermont have an opportunity, a responsibility to curb emissions, but our economy has a great opportunity to make investments in renewable energy, to continue to be a leading area on battery storage, to look at the connection of food production and agriculture and a sustainable system that is more locally oriented. If we do that well, we will draw youth to Vermont to come and live here and work here. But when we do that, we've got to make sure that there's housing available for first-time home buyers, for instance, and affordable rentals. So it's not that there's a huge gulf always between progressives and Democrats. It's that we're very aggressive about keeping the focus right on working families and the needs of young people and growing the economy from the bottom up.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Michael in Waitsfield. Michael, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi. So I just want to talk about one thing. I live in the Mad River Valley. We have no affordable housing here. And when they do talk about affordable housing, they're always talking about somebody contributing land or buying land and building a new house. We have four or five commercial buildings that have been for rent here for 10, 15 years. It probably costs more money to retrofit an old building than a new building, but these buildings are right in the center of town where bus service is available sometimes during the year. And why build a new building while you have buildings rotting? I know in other parts of Vermont that they have taken old buildings and built them into condominiums and apartments. But in this rural area, they just rot. They just sit here and rot, and people talk about building new buildings.
Michael, I think we got it. Let's go to Senator Pearson. Senator, how do you respond?
I like Michael's question, and the reality is there is not one strategy. There has to be a broad approach. We have actually in recent years started gearing some of the money that we mean to promote affordable housing into repairs. What you see too often is sort of like Michael's example, but is a family that is looking for their first home. They can only afford a home that needs a lot of work and to be livable. And then a bank, it's very hard to get a loan to do that kind of work, especially if you don't have a lot of resources. So it's not just about building new buildings. It's about rehabbing our old buildings. We've done over the last several years tax credits to make sure that people are not letting second stories in our small downtowns in commercial space go unused, but rather filling them with apartments. It's got to be an all-on approach, in my opinion, to address the housing crisis.
That is Senator Pearson. He represents the Progressive and Democratic Party. Senator Pearson, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Connor.